Welcome to Movie Dudes, episode 209. I am Jeff, joined as always by Chris.
Hey.
We've been gone for a couple weeks. Instead of going into a long explanation as to why, I'm just going to get right into it. We got a lot to cover tonight.
Yeah.
And we're going to start off with, I guess, you know, probably the big movie that's out right now, which is Spider-Man Far From Home. I didn't see it yet. Chris, you did, so.
I did. You like Spider-Man?
Yeah, sure.
It's a good Spider-Man movie. It's real, like, I mean, I really enjoyed this Spider-Man movie. I think I've enjoyed almost all the Spider-Man movies except for maybe three. Yeah. Even like Amazing 2, like it's okay.
Oh, that's the worst one for me. I like 3 over it, but anyways.
Fair enough. I mean, it's not good, but
those are my two bottom ones. So yeah.
All right. Yeah. I mean, they're at the bottom. Everything else pretty good. You know, this follows along with the MCU Spider-Man. So Tom Holland coming back off of was it Spider-Man Homecoming, and then he's appeared in a bunch of the Avengers movies recently. This takes place after Endgame. So. Yeah. Everybody's back. They make reference to it very early on to kind of like, hey, this happened. Some people moved on, some didn't. It's a little weird that all of Peter's friends did, like, they all got snapped. It's a little awkward, but concept here is Peter and his class are going to Europe on a class trip over the summer, going to Italy, and I believe France is where they're supposed to be going. In the meantime, there's like weird goings on in the world, and needing a hero, Nick Fury turns to Spider-Man, and he gets roped into doing superhero shit on his summer vacation with his class. So there's a little bit of like, you know, subterfuge going on where, like, you know, he's trying to sneak around, get away from them, so he can go do his Spider-Man stuff. It works pretty good. There's good humor in it. I like the cast. What's her name? Zendaya.
Yeah, you know what? Maybe we'll mention her later too. But yeah,
yeah. Zendaya as MJ. She's really good. I like everybody. I like most of the kids in this. Like the guy who plays Flash, he's pretty good. The guy who plays Ned, you know, there's a funny little. It's stupid. It's not really meaningful to the whole story. But like he has like a little fleeting summer relationship with this girl and his class, and that's amusing and played for laughs. But the big thing here is that like Mysterio or Quentin Beck. He appears and he says he's from another dimension that has been destroyed by these elemental forces that have now jumped dimensions as well. And they're here to destroy Earth. So Nick Fury, for whatever reason, calls on, you know, 15, 16-year-old Peter Parker to save the day.
Hey, no more Iron Man, right? You gotta.
Yeah, so that's a thing, like. That's a thing that's very heavy over this film. Cause like, yeah. If you remember from Homecoming, you know, Tony Stark actually appears in it.
Yeah,
he kind of plays, he almost plays like the Uncle Ben role to this Spider-Man. Because we never met Uncle Ben in this universe. Like so Tony's kind of been that mentor for him. And so this plays off a lot of, Tony's gone now. And, you know, but Tony recognized the potential in Peter to be a hero and whatnot. And so he's like trying to live up to that expectation. So it plays a lot with that. It does a pretty good job. Action's good. Jake Gyllenhaal's great. He's just chewing up scenery in this.
It's kind of what I expected. And that's awesome.
Yeah. I mean, he's fun. Zendaya. Like I know some people have been like, oh, she's miserable. Like, I like her. I like I like the kind of note that they have taken with this character. She's sarcastic. She's very, like, she has a dour sense of humor. She's not like an upbeat person, and it, so it's fun. Like, she's like the anti, she's really the anti Mary Jane. Like, Mary Jane was always like very supportive and very peppy, and like this one is not at all.
Generic love interest almost.
Yeah. Like, there's more going on to her. Like, I mean, hey, maybe it's a little one note because, you know, she's playing like where Peter's very optimistic. She's playing the foil to that often, but I liked it. Action's good. Has a pretty good conclusion to it. It's a high school action movie though. Like, you're, and if you don't like, you know, teenage Spider-Man, you're not going to get much out of this. But if you did like previous Spider-Man, this continues that. It's pretty good. I think it's the best Marvel movie this year so far. I mean, there's been three of them. I think it's better than Endgame and Captain Marvel, but
good,
whatever. But it does lean so heavy on the Tony Stark stuff that it's starting to kind of wear on me a bit, and it makes me fear for where the series is going, right? Like, do they have anything else for this character, or is it always going to be he's living in Tony's shadow?
Yeah, you know, one thing I do prefer is, like, in the previous iterations of this, it was just, like, Spider-Man on his own. Like, there was no real, from what I remember, there was no real connection to the MCU.
There wasn't. No, they were completely separate films.
Homecoming has, like, you know, the most. But even that felt like a separate thing to me.
Yeah, yeah, in a way. And this one doesn't, because, like, Nick Fury very much, like, he very clearly comes and calls in Spider-Man to deal with this. So it feels like, hey, you're an Avenger. We're calling on you because you're an Avenger.
Yeah.
The Spider-Man-ness isn't necessarily there. I have hope for the new one. Like, there is a really cool mid-credit scene that if you are a fan of Spider-Man in theaters, like not just this particular Spider-Man, but just in general, it's going to make you really happy. And I'm really interested to see where they go with it. But I think they need to lay off the MCU stuff maybe a little bit and let him breathe on his own and be his own character and not rely so much on the Avengers and that stuff with him. But we'll see. It's good. I'm going to give it a 4. Definitely worth going to see, though.
Cool. I will see it eventually. I like Spider-Man, so I will see it.
Cool.
I saw something new, Chris.
Did you?
Yeah. Remember Aziz Ansari?
Yes.
Yeah. He has a new stand-up special that premiered July 9th on Netflix.
I didn't know this.
Yeah. Directed by Spike Jonze.
Okay.
Shot over 3 performances, like 3 nights in New York, although, like, you won't notice that. Like, it seems like it's all one performance.
Mm-hmm.
And shot in kind of an interesting way by Jones. He kind of gets right up in Aziz Ansari's face. It's like not shot how a typical stand-up special looks like.
Right, it's kind of a concert video, right? Like that's what normal.
Yeah, this is more like you could tell. Like there's a part where they cut away, and you could see how he's directing it. Like he's like literally like kneeling with the camera, like the real camera, like less than 5 feet away from Aziz.
Huh.
As Aziz is sitting too for most of the performance. It's got, you know, kind of a weird intimate thing. And then something I noticed right away was that I'm like, is this shot on film? Because you could see like film specs and shit, like an older movie. And it is. It was shot on 16mm. So I don't know. There's some interesting, you know, I think Jones brings some interesting things to it. But on that, you know, it's a stand-up special, so, you know, how is that stuff? I don't know if I really want to get into how I feel about the Me Too controversy with Aziz Ansari, but we'll see. I mean, I don't want to like, tip to my hat to how I feel about it, but So yeah, he's back with a stand-up special after like kind of disappearing, and this girl wrote an article about him, about a date that they went on, and how he may have been a little aggressive, blah blah blah. And it kind of like, I didn't know whether he's gonna have a career or not. There's a lot of people that got sucked up by the Me Too thing, where it's like, will they come back or not? Like Louis CK is trying to and not doing a very good job of it.
Well,
And
I mean, there's differences too with
there's
how
different, yeah.
like
There's
the way he's
different.
approaching it is different than this, so.
There's, I mean, again, I'm trying not to get into how I feel about this, but the severity of the things that they did were different too. You know what I mean?
Right.
But anyways, so I was like, kind of like, I was like, one, is he gonna talk about what happened? Like, how is this gonna be? And he does mention it right off like the top, and he's kind of like, it made me feel really ashamed, this and that. I had a friend come up to me and said like they were thinking about every date that they had been on, and hopefully, at the very least, there could be a positive that comes out of this, that maybe we think about how we act better, like everybody, And then he gets into a stand-up special, and you think he's kind of done with it, but he's kind of not. And something that I noticed with like people who, especially like stand-up comedians who like are dealing with some controversy, they tend to retreat to this like reactionary, almost right-wing material, where a lot of like the first half of this is like people are so sensitive these days,
Right.
And to be honest, I think some of that stuff can be funny. I do think that people take themselves a little too seriously on Twitter and stuff. So, I didn't hate it, but I was kind of like, I don't know. And then he does a couple of things, like some of the material is so, like some of the new, like stuff that gets away from that as it goes on is so good and so honest and just heartfelt that like it kind of overcomes, I think, some of that reactionary stuff. Just like weird bits about how like, as you get like when you're a little kid, all the old people you see, you never saw them young, so they've always been like these ghouls to you. He's like, but the people that were like your parents' age or whatever, as you grow up, you watch them grow old, and you're like, oh shit, that's gonna happen to me. Like you see how like time actually works. And he's like, I don't know. He's like, I'm doing terrible justice to his bits, but there's interesting things going on, and he does a lot of fun stuff with the audience too. He really incorporates a lot of the people in the front row a lot, including this one dad who brought his two like 10-year-old kids to it. This one part tells this kid, he's like, "Go, I want you to go home and ask your mom if she ever had sex with a black guy." He's like, "Promise me you do it, buddy." He gives him a high five, and without spoiling it, like I think he brings that all around in a really interesting way near the end with all the people that he's like incorporates into the special. And on top of that, I'm trying not to spoil too much. I think it has a really kind of like emotional, kind of grateful ending to it, like a moment to it. So, without spoiling it, I thought it was worth your time. I thought it was a really good stand-up special overall, and I'm willing to give him another chance. I'm a big believer in second chances. I guess whether or not like you can get past that stuff. So know whether or not you'd be okay with watching this, but if you are okay with watching it, it's a recommend for me. I'm gonna give it 4 stars. That's Aziz Ansari right now. It's on Netflix.
Nice. I might check that out. I enjoy a good stand-up special, and I've liked his material in the past.
Me too. Yeah.
So I mean, I don't know how I'll react to, like, it's you never know until you sit down and kind of take a look at something, how you're gonna feel about some
Yeah.
controversy. So, but I'll give it a shot.
I think, for some people, what he says is it's not going to be enough. But I just, again, like I said, I'm already like, I'm inclined to give people second chances.
Yeah.
Usually, if you say, you're sorry to me, we're good. And like, get to a pass anything. But yeah, anyways, I'd say check it out, Chris, if you liked him. I have to throw this out here. I really love Master of None. I hope that comes back one day. But this is something interesting at the time. Another thing is, like, I think you might be interested to see it just as a curiosity for how he's going to handle some of the stuff.
Yeah.
So I'd say check it out.
All right.
We gotta start bouncing around here, Chris. Hold on. You also saw, let's real quick, what do you think of Tim Burton's Dumbo?
It's fine.
That's kind of what my review was, if I
I
remember correctly.
mean, it really, like, I think when you reviewed it, you were like the first 40 minutes are basically the Dumbo cartoon,
Yeah.
and then there's this weird thing that he does after it, and that's fine. I don't know. It
It's
was fine.
just, that's how I felt about it. And, I saw it in the theaters back, I think, in March or whatever. So most of that movie I've forgotten already. So,
Yeah, it's a weird film. Like, I mean,
it
and
is.
it's
I
Tim
mean,
Burton, but
yeah. Because some of those stuff, like some of, I remember some of the stuff like later on was like, it almost felt like a criticism of Disney, but it's this big budget
in a
Disney.
way, yeah, because like the guy has like a park, and
Yeah.
it's very kind of anti-corporate, like
Yeah, but
because
it's this corporate, it's this
yeah,
almost
it's
like,
such a weird thing.
it's like an anti-corporate message coming from this
From a
soulless
corporation.
corporate, yeah, like this soulless corporate product is giving you this anti-corporate message.
I mean, and
But
it's Tim Burton, so you should expect weird, so.
I remember, like, once we did get to that theme park, I kind of liked Tim Burton's visual style, with that theme park. But
Yeah.
yeah, it's just kind of okay. Mortal Engines.
Wow. All right.
Oh, what brought
So
this on?
I was looking for stuff to watch over the weekend while I was home alone. And this is something like trailers looked interesting, right? Like the world has gone to shit. Everybody's kind of moved on to these like transient cities, like and London is the big city here, and it like just devours like little cities. Basically, that's how they keep their engines for these cities on wheels going. What I liked about it is visually, it's very striking. Which makes sense. Like it was kind of financed by the guy who did Lord of the Rings, Peter Jackson, and it was written by him and his like screenwriting team of like Fran Walsh and Philippa Boyens. There's a cool concept here. It is not a good movie. Like there, it's 2 hours and 8 minutes. This feels like it should have been like a TV series, like that you could have expanded on and gotten more. Because there's a ton of like really cool lore, but like character-wise, like it feels really rushed. There's a bunch of stuff. It's like, okay, this seems really cool, and then it's like done in 10 minutes. Oh, okay, that doesn't really work here. Like the action scenes are cool enough. Like as I said, visually it's striking. But yeah, it's kind of a bummer because there's something there. There's a core there that could have been really cool, and I think that Peter Jackson and his team like had an idea. It just is not. It is not an idea for a 2 hour and 10 minute movie. So I'm gonna give it 2 stars, and I would say don't watch it.
Did I get a rating on Dumbo from you?
Three.
Okay.
It's fine.
All right. I'll throw out one more thing I've seen before we get into our movies, and I know you have one more movie, which we'll get to. I saw Stranger Things season 3, Chris.
All right, I saw season two.
All right, so you finished season 2?
I finally finished season two.
Here's how I felt about season 2. I didn't like it, and it just felt like kind of more of the same, but not as good. And
Like, I didn't dislike it, but I was like, yeah, whatever. It's a thing that I'm watching in the corner.
to the point where I don't think I ever watched the last episode of season 2, and I started season 3, and the recap was good. Like, there's like a 5 minute recap before it starts, and that was good enough for me. And Season three is kind of like, hey, what if, that enemy that we fought in season two, the Mind Flayer, what if we didn't kill him? Here's another season of that.
More Mind
And
Flayer, okay.
yeah, it's the Mind Flayer again. And, more product placement than you've ever seen in anything in your life. There's
That was something I noticed about season two. There was a lot of I mean, era appropriate, but Tab Soda and very front and center. Like this
Very
is
obviously
weird.
product placement.
Yeah.
It's fitting in a lot of ways. I mean, the show is a nostalgia ride. I mean, first and foremost, I think that's what Stranger Things
Yes,
is.
very much.
It's member berries. It's remember this, remember that, remember that. And so all the corporations and Netflix figured this out, and I've injected as much of that as they can into this. So this has become a very mainstream, almost soulless product as well. And all that said, I think I like season three the best.
Nice.
It's like 1985 now, so you're like in the heart of the 80s. So, there's more, I think, cooler references and stuff. A lot of it takes place in this mall, like this brand new mall that pops up in their town,
Okay.
which I really love. I was a big mall kid when I was growing up, and it just helps give it that 80s feel. And when you're inside of the mall, it's like all stores you would recognize from the 80s. I guess I was like, maybe I was just more forgiving here, or maybe I had lower expectations after season two or whatever, but I really enjoyed hanging out with these kids this season. And I think it's like a simple, straightforward story. Like I said, I like the setting of like mostly in the mall. I like some of the new characters they added. There's just a simplicity to this season that I really liked. And then like the last three or four episodes, it like really starts moving. It's like pretty action-packed and fast-paced and kind of propelling itself forward. To where it's like it almost feels like one kind of long movie this season. I had fun with it, dude. I don't know. There's a billion things you could say about it that you could pick on it for, but it's just like what you're getting at this point with this show, and so it's like save it for when you're in the mood for that, I guess. I don't know, like,
That's fair.
but overall, I think I liked it a lot more in season two. My memory of season one's kind of fading, but I had fun with this.
Season one, I remember as being like, and I haven't seen it since it came out, but it was like almost like a homage to like Stephen King. Like we love Stephen King's work, and that's we're making like a Stephen King story.
It's like that with and Spielberg,
Yeah.
like kids on bikes type shit. And yeah, hey, if you're in the mood for more of that, I think this is as good as they've ever done. So we give it 4 stars. It was fun. It occurs to me that we might have to. I don't know how many TV shows you've seen, but for me, this year has really been a lot of great TV. A lot of good TV, movies not so much. I'm like, I'm gonna have to do a top 10 TV shows list. And right up there, I guess I'll say this real quick. I know I mentioned this already. HBO's Euphoria. Man, people need to be watching that show. It's great. It's amazing. I'll save talking about it more for when the season's over. I'll do like a full review.
Okay.
Everything about that show I love. I remember I came on really strong talking about it a couple of weeks ago, and it's just gotten better and better since. So,
Nice.
and that stars Zendaya too, and she's great in it. But honestly, there's like side characters in that show that are stealing the show away from her. But yeah, we have one more movie, like one more solo thing before we get into the stuff that you
Yeah.
and I both watched. We'll go into a little deeper, but that is. movie called Aniara, which I had not heard of. Is that a
Um,
sci-fi?
yeah, it's a Swedish sci-fi movie, so it's completely in Swedish. So subtitles. There's a little bit of English at one point, but it's just kind of like, oh, this person speaks English. Everybody else speaks Swedish for whatever reason. Probably because it was made there. The Earth has gone to shit. Kind of like, just imagine 50 years from now, super hot because we weren't able to fix climate change. It's not safe for people to live there. So we've decided we're going to colonize Mars. It's been going on for a while, and we are now shuttling people there on these like city-sized spaceships.
Cool.
Basically like a super cruise ship, but for space. And they're bringing their latest batch. The Aniara is the ship. It's on its way to Mars, and they have to make a maneuver to avoid some space debris. I don't know why we wouldn't have thought that through, but it's whatever. And something punctures through the hull of the ship and hits the reactor. And to solve the problem, they have to eject all the fuel, which leaves them drifting, and they're drifting off course. And so the rest of this is just like an exploration of how people in power kind of relay that information or don't to the public, basically by lying to them. Like, oh, we'll be able to use a celestial body to turn around. And we don't expect that to be like any more than 2 years from now. And so things start to get worse and worse as time goes on. And we get the little flash forwards every once in a while. And humanity just devolves into chaos, where people separate into factions, start cults, start throwing religions, which causes all sorts of problems. People get super depressed. This is not a happy movie. There's no happy ending to it. It is some very, very kind of gritty sci-fi that just deals with like not happy subjects, which is what good sci-fi can do. And it's pretty good. It's only 1 hour and 45 minutes, but I feel like it's just emotionally draining. Like it's a movie that feels like it's way longer than that. And it does chronicle from from the time they take off through what actually goes to 5 million years in the future when they finally hit a celestial body. But at that point, everybody's dead. Spoilers. But yeah, it's just this like hard look at like the degrading of society as shit goes worse and worse, and there's no solution for it. And you just see the population, like the mass suicides, and it's a thing. I'm gonna give it 3 stars, but it's just so emotionally draining. Like I can't go any higher than that.
Sounds like my jam. Maybe I'll check this out. How did you watch this?
I watched it on Xbox Video. We have to rent it. It
Okay.
came out, I guess it hit like straight to video or something in the US. Like it made its debut in May in the US. And I had read a review of it not too long ago, that like made it out like, oh, this is the thing. This is what sci-fi should be. I don't, it's not that, but it's something different for sure.
I will keep that in mind and hopefully seek it out. All right, Chris, we got two theatrical releases that you and I both went to go see in the weeks that we were gone. I guess we'll start with the one that's already came and went. So, at least for this movie was out of theaters within a week and a half by me. Like it was there and it was gone by the time Spider-Man hit, and that is the 2019 remake of Child's Play, I guess before we get into this, like, let's just say straight up, like, how we feel about the Child's Play series. I mean, I have an idea how you feel. I know how I feel, but just like, let's restate it for anyone listening. What do you think of Child's Play, Chris?
It is a B-tier horror franchise. Like
Okay.
it is not up there with, you know, Nightmare, Friday the 13th, Halloween, or even like Texas Chainsaw for parts. Like I think Texas Chainsaw skirts the line between like A and B. This is like the next tier down. Like it's and sometimes it some of those movies try to jump it even lower, but it has its ups and downs. I generally like it. Yeah, so I was kind of like pumped going into CS. FYI, it is still showing in my theater.
Oh yeah, but I'm telling you, mine was gone right away.
Yeah.
Yeah, for me, Child's Play, I enjoy them too. Like, I generally enjoy the series. I have the box set of all of them. That said, I think my fandom or, whatever, my love or whatever for the series kind of lies at the first three. Like, that's kind of the series for me. And yeah, I kind of agree with most of what you said. It's kind of goofy and silly, and some of them are really bad. But all that said, I do think that the original 1988 film is really good. And when I saw that as a kid, like, something that's easy for people to forget, like, I didn't know a damn thing. Like, I didn't know what it was about. Like, my uncle put it on, and I was watching it. And, when Chucky came to life, this kid fucking blew my mind. And I do think that that movie is pretty chilling and effective and kind of scary at times. Like, for as much as people like joke about this series and killer doll movies and like, hey, you just kick the fucking thing and whatever, I do think that first one's pretty good. So that's just giving people that are listening here like an idea, what we're how we're approaching this. And I came to this with like, I thought this was gonna be really bad. What did you think going into this movie like before you went to go see this remake? Were you like, were you looking forward to it? Was it a curiosity?
I mean, I was looking forward to it as a curiosity.
Same.
I wanted to see it just because like I do like the series. I had no real expectations for it either way. Like if it was a garbage film, I'd be like, whatever. And if it was a great
Yeah,
film, I'd be like,
exactly.
all right, that's a nice surprise, but whatever.
And so I guess I'll ask you in a second, but just setting it up though, this is a complete reboot of the series. It's the first one without the creator Don Mancini involved in it. It's the first one without Brad Dourif voicing Chucky. And this is a completely kind of different premise almost, where instead of a serial killer like possessing a doll and bringing it to life with voodoo magic, this one is like, basically a robot doll that kind of acts like an Alexa or something like that, that is just poorly programmed. And so it's like a malfunctioning robot as opposed to a possessed doll.
Yeah, there's no supernatural element to this Child's Play.
There's some elements that stay the same. You have the single mom with the kid, there's a cop. You have Aubrey Plaza playing the mom here. What's his name? Like Brian Tyree Henry plays the cop, kind of like down the hall from them. And you have Gabriel Bateman is playing Andy here. So yeah, it's different. And I don't know, Chris, did you think they pulled it off? Like, what did you think of this?
It's fine. Really, like it is it did not blow me away. But I came out of there going, they did an okay job with it, like, you know, changing the concept basically. Like it is still a killer doll, but changing the idea that there is no serial killer in it and it is just AI that is, you know, it's more of an AI gone rogue tale. And you know how it how AI deals with things and you know it's programmed to be, you know, make sure Andy is his best friend. And it's I think they do a pretty good job with that. I don't think there's any like moments that were like scary. But also I'm not seeing this as a 10-year-old kid anymore. So I do wonder if like I showed it to like, my 11-year-old daughter, like what her take on it would be. So yeah, I don't know. Like I honestly came away on that was okay.
I kind of the same for me, like, and it's kind of better than I expected. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't, dude, I had very low. I just thought this was gonna be really bad, and I like was going into it kind of like, well, let's see what this disaster is gonna be, and it's fine. It's a decent. It's yeah. I don't think it's like super scary, like you said. I think it's just it's fun. Like it's a fun little horror movie, and unlike a lot of remakes, it doesn't feel redundant. They like changed enough that it makes it feel like its own thing, and that's fine. And I think it's actually kind of the strength of the film is that they went their own way with it instead of trying to do a beat for beat remake, you
Yeah,
know?
if they had just been like, oh, it's another serial killer, Charles LeRae, it's just a different cast. We're just rebooting it. I think it would have been way worse. Like the fact that they chose to go, with a different type of story, even if it's not super successful all the way through, you got to give them credit for that.
Yeah, I think it's successful at what it is. Like, I there's a lot that I could point to where I'm like, that sucked. I'm just like, this is just not super high tier stuff. But it was like, I was having fun watching it in the moment. There's some good kills. Like, it's not overly violent. Like, I heard some people say, like, oh, if you're into like kills, you're gonna love this. I'm like, no. I mean, there's some. There's a good one with that one asshole.
Oh, the creeper, the
Yeah.
apartment manager guy.
Yeah, there's a good one involving like a guy on a ladder that's, it has some like decent gore to it.
And I think like there is some scary stuff in it when you dig a little bit deeper, like how much of our shit is connected now. Like
Yeah, the one part where it's like the lady gets an Uber ride and Chucky's controlling it and just fucking with her car and
Yeah,
trying to
and
kill her.
that we've let like a company like Amazon have that much power like over our
Yes.
lives that like that's terrifying, but in a different way than like, your typical slasher film.
It's a fun, like it's a, it feels like it's responding to our times a little bit, where it's just like it has some modern relevance as opposed to, yeah, we're just gonna do Child's Play again, but without the people that fucking made Child's Play. I was fine with it. I think that the, there's a part inside like a department store or whatever near the end where shit goes really crazy. I think that they had a lot of fun with like different, I'm thinking of like the different versions of the robot that you'll see.
I thought that stuff was really fun. I do think like from a story point, it gets a little off the rails there, but yeah, that's a fun sequence of events with the drones and the dolls and like there's some cool inventive stuff there.
Yeah, I think, I like this cast too. I thought Aubrey Plaza did a good job as the mom. It's kind of a more like straightforward role for her, where she does bring that Aubrey Plaza-ness to it a little
Yeah,
bit.
that opening was great. Like you're like, all right, it is her. Like, and she kind of like subdues it from that point on. But like that whole interaction that she has with the customer at the Walmart type store was great.
That felt like more a traditional Aubrey Plaza role, and then and she's got like that edge to her, but she's still like this boy's mom. I think that the kid who plays Andy is much better than the actor from the original.
Oh yeah.
Child actors nowadays are usually better, it seems like. So, but yeah, I mean, I'll give him credit. He does a much better job than I forgot the person who played Andy originally, but. Brian Tyree Henry is cop. He's just kind of there. I think he's just kind of a pretty minor character, but he brings a little bit of
I like
stuff to
the
it.
personality that he has.
Yeah, but it's just not much to it.
Yeah, and similar to Aubrey Plaza, like he has you know, he, I think he has like a couple scenes that are like fun and stand out, but yeah, he's just kind of, he's one of the adults.
Yeah. It's like the script doesn't give her or him much to do, but like, you could tell like they're bringing their talent to it. They're trying to bring some life to it. You have Mark Hamill as Chucky, which, you know, you can't really judge him against Brad Dourif because they're doing different things. Like, he always stays in character as like, I'm your buddy, you know, and he's fine. I don't know. I mean, what did you think he was? I was just fine. I think pretty much anyone could have done it, but
yeah, I mean, it, and that's, you know, something that Mark Hamill does real well.
Yeah,
can just fit into any role, like as a voice actor. Something that, you know, outside of, you know, his live action stuff, like he's done a ton of voice work and it's something he's super successful at. And I think he does a good job here. It's not that iconic Chucky that we've come to, you know over what, almost 30 years or 30 years, but
yeah,
it works for what this is. Like it's a, you know, it's supposed to feel like this detached computerized voice, like an Alexa or a Siri. Yeah, and I think it works.
Yeah, so I mean, generally, like this is a recommend for me. Again, if it's still playing by you, might as well. But if not, I think it's a solid rental come Halloween this year. You know.
Yeah, I think it's fun. I will say the crowd I saw it with, they enjoyed the fuck out of it. Like they were laughing. Like they thought it was funny. Like I don't.
Yeah.
There's, we'll talk about it a little bit in the next movie, but you know, people laugh at things that maybe aren't funny. But
I got crowd stories for our next movie.
You know, a movie like this, which is mostly fun. You know, having a good crowd with it, it is enjoyable. So if you have like friends that enjoy like, you know, fun horror, get them together, watch it at Halloween. It's a good time.
I'm going to give it 3 stars.
Me too.
All right. And we have one more theatrical release in, it's another horror movie. Midsommar, Chris. Film I was looking forward to because I really liked this director, Ari Aster, his previous film, Hereditary, that came out last summer. And he's got another pretty ambitious horror movie here in Midsommar. Where do I begin with this? Premise. I mean, it's basically.
There's a pretty basic premise to it.
Yeah, I'm trying to, like, from a most basic perspective, it's like this couple and some of their friends, they are going to, what is it, Netherlands or whatever?
Sweden.
They're going to Sweden for this, like, festival that one of their friends is from Sweden and he's invited them all to come to this Midsommar festival, and you know, think like very strong Wicker Man vibes if you ever seen the original Wicker Man. Like for me, this movie felt a lot like the Wicker Man with a lot of like influences from Texas Chainsaw Massacre. And there's probably some other stuff in there too. Like I remember there's like a whole bunch of movies I was thinking of that you could compare this to, or that at least feels like it draws from a little bit, but nothing more than I think The Wicker Man, in my opinion. And so like at the heart of this too is like digging into the premise a little more. It's kind of this relationship drama where like it's like this boyfriend and girlfriend, they've been together for a while, and you could kind of feel that their relationship is kind of on its last legs when we meet them. And something very horrific, you know, happens to set off this movie, to start the movie. It had a very strong opening, in my opinion. And it's like, it leaves them in this weird place where, although they should probably just break up, one of them is grieving and the other one's trying to be there for them. And, you know, with any relationship, you try to work through things, right? And so that's kind of at the core. At the core of this, I think, is like as they're going on this trip, their relationship is kind of unraveling. While at the same time, they and their friends are starting to realize that, like, maybe this, like, little fucking thing that they've gone to is a little weird. So that's kind of some of the setup. I mean, we're going to dig into this, and we might even do some, like, heavier spoiler stuff at the end. But I've done a lot of talking. Chris, yeah, what do you have to say about Midsommar to start this off?
Yeah, so I did not love Hereditary. I think I came away giving it a 3, like based on the performances. I had some issues with certain aspects of that film. I think Midsommar is a stronger movie. I think it is more coherent in a lot of ways because I think Hereditary goes off the rails in like the last 5 minutes of that movie, and maybe not in a great way. This is more, it's more straightforward. There's a mystery to unravel, and we are along on the ride with these people. So we are getting the mystery as it is kind of going. But like there's just like with Hereditary, there's this sense of unease throughout
Yeah.
everything. Like from the opening of the film, like you said, like super strong opening.
Yeah.
But there's just this dread from the start. Like Ari Aster has a way of just, expressing that to the audience in such a way that it almost feels overwhelming at times.
It's just like I think it feels like real stakes, it feels like real people, and it feels like he's digging into like real adult drama type stuff that like most horror movies kind of don't rise to, you know what I mean? Like it's
Right, and when it and I think because of that, it feels realistic, right? Like, and it's something Hereditary actually does as well, does very well, because the drama behind it all is real. Like, in Midsommar, like it is, the glue kind of holding this all together, and the reason that they're all in this together is because of this tragic event that happens, just as this guy is like, I need to get out of this relationship with her. And he doesn't know how to do that after this has happened. So he kind of like just keeps stringing her along, right or wrong. I mean, I don't know if there's any right way to break up with somebody after the events that she went through. Like, how long do you wait? Like, so he's just like, he's awkward about it, and so are his friends.
I think you and I are giving him. I mean, that's how I read it too. But it's like so much of the talk around this movie is that like he's just a bad boyfriend, and I'm like, that's part of it. That's part. I mean, I think the movie does kind of say that as well. But I'm like, there's specific things in there where I'm like, I don't know, dude. It seems like he's trying.
Yeah, and
Like
he
he's
just doesn't
not,
know
maybe
how.
he's not like an awesome dude, but like he's also not like. He's not the one fucking friend played by Will Poulter, who's just this
Who's
total
great. Like, he
asshole.
is
He's so good in it.
phenomenal in this movie.
That was me. Like, if you put me in the situation, I'm that guy. I'm the dude standing there hitting his fucking vape every 2 seconds, going, "Hey, when's the party starting?" And he's, yeah, but he's like this asshole character, but he's also kind of like comic relief in this, But yeah, just as a contrast to like this boyfriend who's supposedly shitty, and we'll get into some of the more specifics, I guess, as we get we do spoilers. But yeah, it's like a combination of it's a real bad situation, and it's just like a natural like it's a relationship just kind of ending, and he's also maybe a little bit what's the word? Not like an asshole. It's like.
I mean,
Like kind of neglectful, kind of.
like as far as a boyfriend, yes. I mean, I think personality wise, the guy is kind of a dick. Like, that there are other story pieces in there that kind of lend to that as well. He's not like the best dude.
It's just like if Ari Aster is trying to paint this guy as like this total douche, I'm like, I don't
There's
know. There's
better
moments
ways.
like all right. So when they first arrive at this place. They're all like, let's fucking eat some shrooms and like let's trip. And you know, his girlfriend's like, I want to be settled in before I fucking start taking drugs. Like, I don't, you know,
right.
want to be discombobulated, blah, blah, blah. And the boyfriend's like, all right, then I'll wait for you. And their friend, played by Will Poulter, is like, well, dude, if we take it at fucking different times, it's like we're not even on the same trip. It's like not going to line up, blah, blah, blah. And the boyfriend says, I think the nicest thing he could have said in that situation, he says, then do you want to wait for us? Because I'm waiting for her. You know what I mean?
Right. Which like, that's actually something a good boyfriend would do.
Yeah. So I'm like, it's like, if he's trying to, you know, I think that's part of what makes Ari Aster, I think, a good writer. Is like, he doesn't paint him as, like, this one-note thing. Right. It's like, he does try sometimes.
Yeah, he's not, like, and I think that's what makes it, because, look, most people aren't cartoon villains, right? Like, and they have complexities. Like, not everybody's going to be an asshole all the time. Like, he may be trying to figure out a way to get out of this, but he also knows that he's in it now, so make the best of it. Like, let's try not to, you know, let's do the boyfriend thing and play along with this. You know, as it goes on, things happen.
There's a lot you can actually, like, focus in on in this movie.
Yeah. Well, like, for me, like, I really enjoy, like, the cult aspect of it. Like, that they really, like, went deep on it, and it's a slow build, right? Like,
yeah.
All the way up, and there's this shocking moment, I don't know, about maybe about halfway through, that's just,
yeah.
Holy fuck. And like, you, I think, like, and me, and like, the audience kind of knows where it's going.
Yeah.
But like, and we're maybe just one step ahead of the crew that's there, and it plays like really, really well.
Well, the shocking moment is it's the movie's so restrained up until it, and even as it's happening, and you're like, all right, I think I know what's happening here. Like, when it goes so graphic with the violence, I was just like, whoa, and. Like, a lot of things in this movie, and a lot of things I've noticed in Ari Aster's movies, like, I think general audiences are confused as to how to handle them or process them or react to them, because it's like so many people giggling and laughing at weird shit, like in Hereditary and once again in here. And during this scene, and we'll get into the specifics of the scene, but. While I'm talking about audience weird reactions, I had a bunch of, like, bros sitting straight to the left of me. And as this midway scene happens, like, this shocking scene happens, like, the guy, two people, like, the guy to my left and his friend just left of him, like, decided it was time to start doing Mystery Science Theater. Like, they're just like, oh, ew, spaghetti! And, like, they're just, like, saying, like, and they're doing, like, fake dialogue for the people, like, oh, we're just going to take you up on this cliff now. You're too old, and we're going to get rid of it. Like, they're doing shit like that. I'm, like, biting my tongue, and I'm like, you know what? I'm not letting, like, you know, I pay money to come see these movies. I'm here on opening fucking night at 7 p.m. I'm here to watch the movie, not listen to your fucking commentary. So, like, I finally, like, turned to the dude right next to me, and I'm like, shut up. And he went to go turn to his friend, and his friend kept, like, talking, and his friend turned and looked at me, and I'm like, shut the fuck up. And they shut up.
And they should. Like, look, if you're not enjoying the movie, don't spoil it for everybody else. Like, and that's what it seems like here, right?
They were having fun, but it's like, this isn't Friday the 13th, dude. It's
right, but they were enjoying it in their own way, because I think that, yeah. Like, my take on it is like, oh shit, this is not what we thought it was going to be. Let's just have our own fun with it. And yeah, knock that shit off.
It's almost like it felt like, because it was so intense and kind of shocking and this and that, like they were trying to like whistle through the graveyard through it or whatever. But like, I don't care what the reasoning was or not. It's like, dude, I paid to come see this movie on opening night. This is a fucking art house fucking horror film. This isn't fucking some dumb slasher movie or fucking like, you know, if I see a dumb, like, I want audience reaction in Child's Play. And I want Rihanna's reaction here, but like keep the fucking talking to the minimum, you know?
Yeah,
you're just going on for 5 minutes and getting louder and louder and louder, and I'm finally just like,
you don't need to commentate through it.
I've never, like, the most I've ever done is like shush, and that's like someone like a few rows away. These people were like, I could reach him and touch him, and I told him, shut the fuck up. Like, I didn't even stop to look at like what this guy looked like. So like the whole rest of the movie too, I was thinking about, I'm gonna get fucking my ass kicked on the
You're gonna
way out
jump
of here.
Me after this, yeah.
So I was pretty quick to get out of there, but it felt good. Like, I was a little shaky right after I did it. I was like, you know, it was like when you have like one of those moments of confrontation, it's just like, but you know what? It felt good to tell him to shut the fuck up.
Yeah.
But getting back to the movie, yeah, I do think that, like, there's that, there's a scene near the end. The whole climax, people were like giggling and fucking, you know, kind of acting, I think, kind of immature. Like, I don't know, dude. It's like there's some weird sex involved in the climax, and everyone is just like, ooh, 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 ooh. Like, it's just like that kind of pissed me off. But as for me, I enjoyed it all. Like, I thought this all really worked. I love how it's like horror in the daylight. I know it's like a cliche that everyone has been saying about it, but I do love that.
It is.
It's bright and sunny.
It's very bright. Like 95% of this film takes place during the day.
There is a lot of, one, I'm a fan of psychedelics, like in real life. But there's a lot of like psychedelic shit in this movie too. Like I mentioned, like they eat shrooms. They do some really good stuff with the visuals in this film with that. Especially I think near the climax, I'm sure you noticed some of the stuff that they're doing, like all the trees and the mountain in the background is kind of warping and shifting.
They were moving, yeah.
Someone's wearing a crown, and if you look at her crown, it's like flowers all over it. It looks like the flowers are like opening and closing. One of my favorite things is like there's like this piece of meat in the center of the table as they're doing, like, it's kind of this climatic like dinner scene almost. And there's like this piece of meat in the center of the table, and it's just kind of unidentifiable and kind of always like kind of shifting and like moving, and it's all gross.
Yeah.
Like all of that stuff, one, I think is like a pretty good representation of what like a trip could feel like, or what it could look like. And it makes for an interesting looking film. You know, like it looks cool. Like as the climax happening, everything is like all like fucking weird looking, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, I'm just like, I'm just bouncing around from things before we get into spoilers here. Like what are things do you think we should touch on as like kind of more generally before we get into like very specific?
I mean, I think we've done a pretty good job.
Like, what did you like the climax of the film? Did you think it? I think there's a risk that it does kind of come off a little goofy, like Hereditary does too. Like the end of Hereditary comes off as pretty goofy, especially like the last like minute or so of it.
Yeah, no, I think I don't. Yeah. For me, this works a little bit better. Like the whole cult thing is like these guys are already out there. We already kind of see that side of it, and the reveals we're getting along the way kind of point to some of that. And they also, you know, in Hereditary, like we don't really get the breakdown of what the rules are. Here they kind of do lay out, like, you know, that there's this big scene where, you know, Florence Pugh's Dani is, you know, she's standing on this DS and, on this podium type thing covered in flowers, and they're spelling out the rules though for what's going to happen to end this festival. And it's like, all right, I get it.
Yeah,
like,
you're right, they do define it.
Like here's exactly why we're doing this and why we needed to do all this because of our weird belief system, which is completely fucked up, but like we need to replenish, we need, like, you know, the earth is giving us new life. We need to give it back life, and we don't have enough yet to sacrifice themselves. So we bring these other people in. It was very fascinating in that way. And yeah, I thought, like, for me, like I thought that the ending worked really well. Yeah, there's maybe some stuff that the people are gonna find a little goofy, But I liked it.
Yeah, it worked for me. Like, I know, like, on repeat viewings, I'm not gonna have the people fucking giggling and shit. Like,
Right.
I'm able to enjoy it. Yeah, and like you, I'm weird about this. I think Hereditary might be the better film in some ways. Like, I think it's stronger thematically what it's dealing with in terms of grief. And here, this is more of a, I don't know. I'll see how it evolves over time for me, but like this is more of a kind of subtle thing about like a bad relationship. Maybe like I'll start to think that that's what makes this better is the more I think
Yeah,
about it.
well, but I think very much it is very much a, it's very subtle in the way it handles things, but it is dealing with the core of it is the relationship between Danny and her boyfriend, Christian. And, the ending kind of lays out like the ultimate comeuppance of,
Yeah.
whether you agree, that he was bad or not. From her side, like if you take her point of view, it's the
Yeah.
right call, right?
Yeah.
Like she's found peace from the tragedy at the start. She's discovered that the boyfriend she's been on this journey with is not the one, and has also betrayed her in a way. And so she gets her ultimate revenge.
Yeah, so like, yeah, it's like there's still that adult drama at its core, like just like Hereditary, but it feels like more of a straight genre, like horror movie, also. But like you were just saying, like that adult drama plays very directly into the horror that happens near the end. And I think it all comes together pretty beautifully and pretty greatly. Let's leave it at that, I guess, for non-spoilers. I'll just say that I think, one, it's a bright spot in a summer of pretty derivative, not so great movies. You could say parts of this are derivative, but this just feels like an original vision in a summer full of mostly garbage. It's one of my favorite films of the year for sure. And yeah, it's nice to see like a classy fucking horror movie like this. And also, I guess one last thing, like it's 2.5 hours long. I had no problem with the length. I was into it. I was into this movie.
Oh yeah, it's it's a harrowing 2.5 hours, but I was not like, what fucking time is it? I gotta get out of here. I was along for the whole ride.
So I've gone back and forth on my rating of it, but when I do think about it, it is one of my favorite films of the year, and because of that, I'm gonna give it a five.
It is one of my favorite films of the year as well. I'm going to give it a four. For me, it's just I enjoyed it way more than Hereditary. It's been a weird year of film. I think there's been a lot of okay stuff, or slightly better than okay stuff. And this is one that kind of stands at the top of that list.
This movie stands out, man. Just look at what we've gotten this year.
Something different.
Honestly, yeah.
I really love Florence Pugh too. Like,
I mean,
more of
I
her.
should mention, I thought she was great in it. I think she's pretty, but like very talented. But she's great in this role. Like her and Will Poulter are both fucking fantastic. And everyone's goodness, like her boyfriend plays the role exactly how he needs to get the job done.
Yeah.
Let's talk about some spoilers now. So if you have not seen Midsommar, I would skip out on this episode. We'll be back next week with I Know I'll Have Crawl.
Yep.
That's all I could guarantee you.
We'll have Crawl and hopefully that Annabelle movie. Hopefully.
All right. So we're go now we can just kind of stop talking around things. Like, yeah, like that part in the middle I thought was fantastic. Like, it really bugged me that people were fucking talking and having fun because it's like these old couple, like, you see what's coming, it's coming, but then you're like, I didn't think Aster was gonna go like that with it, where it's like her head bangs off the rocks and her
Oh yeah,
fucking face is
there's
missing and her brains are falling out.
fucking craters, and it's like,
Yeah.
like I thought like, oh, he's going to pull back and like, you know, we're going to see it more from, you know, the perspective of we're not going to see it from their perspective, although we will see like the fall, but then it's just going to quickly like focus on the reaction. But he kind of lingers on the gore a little bit before we kind of jump to the outsiders of this cult.
Yeah.
It works really, really well.
Yeah, and then like basically, like, so like, so if you're listening to this and you have not seen the film, if you didn't listen to what I said, I did turn this off. So it's like this, basically, like, it's part of like this festival that they do, like this 9-day festival, and it's like the one day is like you kill off the old people because they reached a certain age.
Yeah, so like this cult like deals in they view life as seasons.
I like that little speech too.
So it's like everybody kind of like each season lasts 16 years. So it's like, you know, spring, summer, fall, and then finally winter. And winter is like what, when you're like 72 years old, like when you hit 72, it's, you know, you're done.
Yeah. So we have an older couple here that goes up on top of a cliff and they just jump off. She hits her head on the rocks and like fucking, again, her like head explodes. And then the dude basically survives the fall and just like breaks his legs.
It's so gruesome too.
And then the dude walks over with a giant fucking like carnival hammer and attaches his fucking head. And I was like, holy shit. I'm like, oh, here we go, man. Like, so there's that. The ending, of course, there's all sorts of things we could talk about with the ending. Like, one, I really dug it. And it does build, like, it's just like the Wicker Man. You're like, oh no, now bad shit's going to happen. I love, so they like drug both of them. They basically give them some sort of hallucinogen again. It could just be mushroom tea or I don't know.
Yeah, I think early in the film, when they're offered the mushrooms,
they're like, we make tea of it, yeah, as well.
And
then you see like this dirty water that they're giving it from, so it could very well just be mushroom tea.
Yeah.
One, I just love that we have this climax happening while they're both tripping, and I love how when they come up to like he's like sitting off to the side, meanwhile she's like the May Queen and she's getting all like celebrated. And like they're like trying to drug him because they have a role for him too, where it's like they want him to impregnate this redhead because I don't know, he has the right genes or something. I don't know.
Oh well, because they're a closed off community, they need to bring outsiders in to you know propagate the community
to make kids who aren't freaks.
Yeah,
because at least the one freak there to do the Oracle shit.
Right. So like they specifically state that like, you know, you have to go through whatever the High Council is or whatever to have sex, to be cleared to have sex, and they do like some inbreeding specifically to get their kind of their Oracle. And it's this handicapped, like severely handicapped inbred. I don't want to call it a creature because it was a human, but I mean, like they play it off like it is almost like Leatherface to a point.
He's very scary looking and he's kind of like a Leatherface type character, but yeah, the thinking, their logic is that like because he's so simple, like he's more in tune with like nature is and whatever.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But anyways, the getting back to what I love is like, so they bring him some of the mushroom tea, and he's like, yeah, no thanks. I think I'm going to have a bad trip, so I don't want to. And they're like, nah, it'll be fine. Just fucking. So he just does it anyways, and of course, real bad trip. Real weird trip. They take him into, like, this hut, which you knew that they were going to use. Wait, did they have sex in the hut, too? Is it the same hut as the... No, it wasn't.
No, it wasn't a hut. It was almost like a church type.
I think it was. I think it was the chapel or whatever the fuck where they had the book. Maybe
it might be.
Anyways, yeah, it's this kind of blank room with a fucking bunch of naked ladies in it, and this girl who's been eyeing him and teasing him the whole movie. And you're like, I guess I'm like the asshole boyfriend. Like, I'm just like, I can see where he's coming from. He's like kind of looking at her the whole time. Like, that might be fun, but also, no, this is bad. I don't want to do that. But it's like at some point, he's so drugged up, and he's just like, I don't know. I guess I'm. I love Chris. Maybe he's like, oh, it's just their culture. I guess. That's what he does. That's his excuse for when the couple kills themselves. Like
He's
he's
like,
like,
I
I don't know.
mean,
We gotta respect the culture.
you have to understand this isn't our culture. These are their traditions.
I loved that fucking logic to try to rationalize what the hell is going on. And I just kind of love like that crazy climax, like where you have her doing the May Queen kind of like ceremony type shit, and it's like intercutting it with him getting like kind of dragged into the sexual encounter that he's not sure whether he wants to have or not, but he's high and he's just like, well, here we go.
So sure, like and you could see that he feels it's awkward, like
Yeah, oh, I mean,
all
it's
right,
super
yeah,
awkward, like.
and and I mean I know we did criticize people for lab, but there was a moment where it got a pretty big, like an awkward laugh, because like the whole scene is awkward,
Yes.
but this old lady like gets behind him
It
and
starts
like
pushing his
pushing
ass.
his ass like in to go faster, like. Fuck, dude, we've been waiting around here forever. Like, when are you gonna finish? Like,
You know what I thought was like a really cool and kind of almost kind of a funny touch and everything is in the scene before that, this like one of the ladies, I think it's the same lady, she like kind of walks over and she kind of starts to get involved with him. Like she like reaches out her hand like towards him and he's like, whoa, whoa. Like at first he's like startled, like what is this hand reaching in here? Who is this?
this is
And then he
weird.
gets into it, then he's like, all right, fuck yeah. Like you could tell, like there was a moment of being startled, and then like he kind of like was like, "Fuck it, I'm rolling with this. Whatever this is, I'm doing it." And
Yeah.
then he probably kind of got into the other ladies being there.
He's like, it's like when in Rome, like
It felt like, again, we've seen weird cult movies, we've seen all sorts of scenes like this and premises like this, but just like it felt original. It felt like something different, like. It felt like I was being surprised every kind of thing. Like, even though I knew where it was kind of going, I'm getting little surprises,
what I love that when when he finally wraps it up and he stumbles out of there, he's just kind of like stark naked out in the middle of this village and like doesn't know where to go, but he's like, fuck, there's people here. He's like running around naked.
I mean, there is a comical element to it, and it is kind of funny, but I just, to me, like the amount people were laughing made me like think that like, hey, people are uncomfortable seeing this with like with a big group of people, like this is awkward, and so it's kind of like nervous laughter too,
It's like I mean, for as forward thinking as a lot of us like to think we are, like this country is still very repressed when it comes to
Yeah,
sex and stuff. And yeah, I could definitely see that where
so
people be like, this is weird.
you're in a theater, a dark theater, dozens of people watching this naked dude run around. Also, near the climax, there is another moment of gore that I thought was absolutely fantastic, where I forgot who it was. I think I forgot who it is. Someone finds one of the people that were missing, and he is like flayed open.
Oh, in the chicken coop.
Yeah, he's like hung up but cut open, still alive, with his like lungs pulled out of him and they're like pinned up in the air, but you can see him breathing with the lung. Oh my God, dude, it's fucking like this movie is not like, it's like you could point to one or two moments of like graphic imagery, but the moments that we get, I thought were really memorable and really like, I'm a jaded horror fan, and I was like, whoa, like when I saw him
Yeah,
get his
it's
lungs out, and like when I realized he was still alive and he was breathing, like you see the lungs move, I was like, oh my God, dude.
one that that's something he does really well, because like, you know, similar with Hereditary, like it's, and it's used sparingly. Like
yeah.
he likes to let the drama play out so that when he does bring the shock, he completely knocks you off with it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because yeah, like that scene there, you know, the cliff diving scene, like they're all like super shocking. And they get the reaction I think that he's looking for out of it.
It almost it reminds me a little bit of like an S. Craig Zahler film, where it's like that guy's movies are like real slow and then all of a sudden very shocking violence. Like that's here too, but like I think this is like almost more sparingly. Like again, it's kind of like the two moments we talked about. It's like that cliff jumping scene, and then you know you find this dude cut open. But both of them are really effective, I thought. Again, going back to the climax, I enjoyed the whole climax. And like the very ending, Chris, like, so basically they say what? It's like nine people, right?
Yeah.
Or it's like, yeah, nine people. Like, you find out at the end of this, it's like, they're like, they, you know, they're announcing it to everyone there. They're like, all right, we have to like sacrifice nine people to the gods here or whatever the hell. And kind of, I think it's like eight of them are basically determined, but the May Queen gets to select one, and she chooses her boyfriend. Like, did I get that right? Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah. She's given the option of, you know, selecting. There's like two choices or whatever, and one of them is her boyfriend though, and the other one is you know, somebody else, and oh, it's just like some random dude, I guess, from.
Yeah,
from the community, and like without word, really, like she selects,
yeah,
Christian, and then like you get to see him prepped for it, like
also disturbing.
Yeah, it's like, and it's so great because they tie it back to things that like you see,
yes.
Like so it's like you're walking in and it's like, oh, there's a bear in a cage, and like, but that bear comes back because that's what they stuff Christian in.
Yeah, so it comes back, to death. Not the way you expected.
Yeah, like it's not like the bear gets to eat him. No, they killed the bear, made it into a fucking suit, and put Christian in it, and then roasted him to death.
Like, and he gets put in this hut, which the very first time they showed this hut, they're like, yeah,
you can't go in there. Yeah,
ceremonies, but you can't go in there. And I'm like, I knew right away that was probably the Wicker Man. Like I thought, like I was like, oh, that's what they're gonna put people in, and they're gonna light that entire hut on fire. And they do. And I think it's a fantastic ending. It's like her watching him die, and like, you know, she's sitting there as queen. It's like, you know, metaphorically, it's like her ending the relationship. You know, she's like, this is over, and I've made the right decision to step away from him. And also to, you know, to believe in myself and what I can do, you know, like, I wonder, like, did she just stay there with them after that? Like,
which I think that's the takeaway that we kind of get,
or,
right?
Or what if the shrooms wear off and she's like, oh God, what did I do?
Well, I think ultimately, like, she, you know, I'm trying to think of Pele, or, yeah, Pele, the Swedish friend that brings
her,
that has tricked you know.
There's kind of a budding romance between them.
Yeah, he's definitely laying on thick and trying to say like, hey, you know, Christian's like, he's my friend, I really like him, but he's kind of a dick and he's not right for you, and he's kind of like trying to do the hard sell on like staying in the community with him. You know, and all that entails. So
yeah, have fun jumping off that cliff in like 30 years.
Yeah.
I do love the one line he says to her. I think it was him that says it to her, where he's like, you know, does he feel like home to you? Do you feel held by him? Like, it kind of cuts to the center of like what, you know, the problems that they're having or whatever, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
I just, there's a lot here, and we've kind of gone on about this a long time. So you already heard our scores and our kind of final thoughts. We're just kind of digging through specifics that we wanted to talk about. Was there anything else that, like, oh, I guess one other thing is the opening, dude. I thought that was really strong opening.
Well, it's very strong. I think it ties in a lot with I love that his use of color and the way he shot the film here, it almost seems like a little overexposed. Like there's
pretty saturated, like
there's definitely yes, a saturation of everything going on. And even in like that you know the terrifying kind of suicide scene that happens at the beginning, there's like these muted colors but very colorful, always very colorful, even when it's dark. And the use of sound, like there's lots of breathing, and he accentuates it throughout the movie, and it drives that emotion home. There's this great scene, right after Danny finds Christian, kind of like in the middle of that sex ritual, and like all the other cult members are around her, and she is like panting and crying, and like they're just like kind of breathing right along with her, and it just becomes this like
oh yeah
super thumping noise. It's great, like. Everything he's done, like sound and visually, is accentuates yeah. everything in this movie.
Yeah, I love the whole opening part. Like, just it kind of like slaps you across the face, where it's like, oh, it's even worse than I thought. Oh, it's even worse than I thought.
Yeah, it just keeps going. Like, and just to see like that, when they finally get to her sister, and she's
like. Fucking duct tape the fucking host or fucking mouth, and they do some great stuff. Forrest Pugh is very good in it. They do stuff with like her having panic attacks after that, like 6 months down the line. But they do also show you like what's going on in her head sometimes. Like and like you get some really cool imagery where she's like. Having visions of her family, like, with the fucking hose going up to her. Like, remember they, like, show a shot of her sister or something?
Yeah.
Like later on, where it's, like they do imagery with that suicide, that murder-suicide, later on. I don't know, it's just, like,
And then he uses, great use of, visually with the effects of, the exhaust when she's in that dream world. Like, everything that she sees is like in that kind of car exhaust bog.
Yeah. Yes. See, like that's the thing. I bounced back and forth on the score, and I decided while we were reviewing it, because like I just kept thinking of like, oh yeah, and then this, oh yeah, and then that, and like there's just it's almost 2 weeks now, or almost it feels like since I've seen this. It's been at least a week or whatever. I've thought about this movie a lot, and there's a lot of things that we could touch on, and I doubt we touched on even half of them. So, anyways, I guess that's Midsommar.
Yeah,
I could ramble on about all sorts of little things, but I'd say go see it. Like, I'd say this is go see in the theater if you are a horror fan. I think people who aren't horror fans. I don't know.
It's like, I do wonder.
If
like,
you're a film person, you should see it too. Yeah.
I know. People are going to see it just because of, but they may wait till it comes out on video. And I do wonder how it translates. I'm sure it's fine, but there's something about like the audio and the visual in a theater setting, and this really like it. This captures it. Like, this is the reason you go to the movies. It just as much as why you go see Star Wars or the Avengers on a big screen, because of you want that spectacle. Like, this has, there's his use of film as a medium, and where it's displayed helps. But I'm sure it'll be fine, again on video, but I think in theater, like, it is a prime thing you need to go see.
I'm like trying to decide whether I'm going to buy. Like, I did not buy Hereditary because I just feel like it's so bleak that I just don't see myself rewatching it. And this one, it's bleak, I think the thing that might hold me back from rewatching is its length, but I kind of want this in 4K just for how fucking beautiful it'll look, you know? So we'll see, but yeah. Anyways, we both really loved it. Yeah, if you're into film or into horror, I think it's a
yeah.
Theater. Speaking of theater experience, Chris, and I know I already mentioned this, like, I'm super excited to see Crawl with like a 7 p.m. crowd on like Saturday night.
That'd be fun.
I just feel like it's gonna be fun. Yeah. I hope it gets a crowd. Anyways, that's our episode for this week. We'll be back with Crawl at the very least.
Crawl currently sitting at 100% on Rotten Tomatoes. Only 14 reviews, but those early 14 reviews are all positive.
Aja's back, baby.
Yeah.
Is it Aja or Aja?
I have no idea.
We'll say I said it right. I said it both ways, so I said it right.
I say it both ways, too, so.
Back.
Let's see.
And we'll be back with Crawl. Movie dudes.